do run into organizations that are really adamant about not doing anything in China for one reason or another. My response is the same for everyone, which is, look, that's fine. You don't have to be in right now, but do be aware that you will be in the market at some point.
I'm Steve Stein, and this is Inside Asia. That was Peter Alexander, founder and managing director of Zeben Advisors, a consulting firm based in China. Peter's built his career around advising clients on how to best capitalize on growing investment opportunities in the greater China market. The topic of this episode, asset management in China. Peter started off by talking about the bad press that the China market has received. He told me that most of his time is spent traveling and trying to counter that negative perception. He started off by explaining where that negative perception comes from and why we need to get past it.
In 2015, there was clearly a sharp market correction in the Chinese markets. I mean, even at one point, I think the market had closed effectively for 5 days. You couldn't trade. And this is going to have an impact on sentiment. It's going to have an impact on how investors view whether or not they want to allocate. Because if you can't unwind a position, it makes it difficult.
The view was it was just too volatile, not worthy of consideration because of some of these regulatory and volatility issues.
I think when looking at China, it's always important to remember that regardless of sort of talking points, it's an emerging market. Emerging markets are volatile markets. China is a volatile market.
By definition.
The way that we put it is China's greatest export for the last 5 years has been volatility. But having said that, there was also then a follow-on unexpected one-day depreciation in the RMB by 2%. And you could see the impact that China now has on markets globally. I mean, this caused at one point the New York markets to drop by 1,000 points, the Dow Jones. Now, okay, this is relevant in the point of history, but the interesting element is that when you're looking at China, you can find any evidence you want to support however you think about the market. It's what we call confirmation bias. It's that big of a market. And I don't mean big in terms of its size, I mean in terms of its complexity. But the interesting element is that when you have, let's say, GDP numbers where they come in higher than expected, you're typically finding the global press and the mainstream media finding a way to be able to turn that into a negative. Not to say that there aren't issues, there are clearly issues. But again, there was all this talk over the last couple of years of this supposed imminent and sharp devaluation in the renminbi.
This is fear. This is suspicion. This is kind of the idea of central planned economy. They're probably fudging the numbers. What's going into that negative press?
Use a single word, which is the unknown. It's not a market that we have found there's been an enormous amount of time and energy to really understand. Typically, when looking at the market, and there is some validity to this approach, but it's to take what's worked elsewhere in assessing the opportunity set and then overlaying that on China. And I think that there is some, again, validity in doing so. But at the same time, there are, I think, character traits that need to be factored in. But I can get to that in a second. What I wanted to address to my earlier point was, from a business point of view, when you have throughout 2015 and 16, especially last year, a growing chorus of global investors that are expecting the renminbi, let's say, to collapse imminently due to over-leverage or the property market or what have you, it makes it very difficult for global business decision makers to allocate to the market. The issue that we have, however, is that these prognostications have proven to be wrong, for lack of a better word. In fact, if you look at the renminbi, which was supposed to decline 30 or 40%, it's actually appreciated 3% this year. Now, I would challenge anybody to go out and try to find headlines that are talking about the improvement of the renminbi. Most, if you will find them, will talk about more of a softening of the U.S. dollar, and that's why the renminbi. So you're always finding the two-sided coin where, when talking about China, it's the negative narrative that gets discussed rather than the positive narrative.
What's driving that, Peter? Where is it coming from? Institutions, individuals, the media, financial services area?
Well, I mean, from broadly speaking at the industry level, it doesn't really matter whether you're in autos, pharma, financial services. There's an opportunity set that's recognized, but there's also a recognition when targeting China that it is not easy. And it isn't easy. What's the old adage, right? If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. You're also seeing all of these stories of late that are talking about the likes of the technology companies running into massive problems here. okay, I use most of the technology. I don't seem to have a problem. There's the issue of the VPN. Are they going to stop the VPN? So you have this constant barrage of negative mainstream media that's coming out. And I'm not saying that that these comments are wrong, but here's the irony, and especially for our industry. So the industry that we focus on at Zeben Advisors is the investment management space. This is running other people's money. And when you look at investment management as a function, you can actually strip it down to a single activity. Investment management is about individuals in these companies assuming risk in their portfolios, but believing that the risk that they're taking is being compensated for. Okay, that's how you make your money.
Right. So the definition of.
The definition of. Okay. Sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. You just hope to be more right than wrong over time.
So in the game of risk management.
Correct. Okay. Now, I fully subscribe to that, by the way. Now, the interesting element, though, is that when you are looking at the China market, the entire conversation is on what?
Risk.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's all on risk, and it's not looking at reward. And then what we have permeating that discussion are comments like, nobody makes money in China. Nobody's been successful in China. The Chinese will steal. The Chinese will lie. I mean, all of these sort of these notions that have been around that keep getting, I would say now, far more put out there for discussion.
But there is evidence, but what you're suggesting is it's almost been kind of heightened into this kind of stereotype that's now preventing real consideration of investment in China.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. And I think that there's an interesting takeaway, and perhaps I would argue, while it will potentially be contentious in terms of the talking point that I'll share, it's also, I believe, accurate. I mean, I've now been here in excess of 20 years, the whole time in Shanghai, 20 straight years. And I'll go in and I'll meet with boards of directors. I'll go in and meet with these CEOs. And one of the first things that I'll talk to them about when they're looking at doing some sort of business in China is to remind them that, look, when you're dealing with a counterparty that's Chinese, be mindful that they may lie, they may cheat, they may fabricate the truth. That is typically followed by this consternation of, I would never, ever work with anybody that would lie or cheat or steal or any of this. And I allow them to let off their steam. I have to then follow up. And this is one of those points that I think people they recognize only after the fact of my saying it is, look, the Chinese do not define themselves, do not operate by the same Judeo-Christian ethos that has been the permanence of, I would say, Western business for the past, 300-400 years.
Right.
And yet the Chinese have been around the famous quote of Wu Qian Yan, like 5,000 years. So, you know, there is this whole topic of cultural differences.
So in some way, it's know the devil. In knowing the devil, now engage.
First of all, you will never know China. For those of us who have been around long enough, there's an inverse relationship between the length of time you've been here and actually how much you know.
Right.
You talk to many people who have been here for a year or two, and they have a tendency of thinking, I get China.
So to take it down a little bit, know the operating principles of the Chinese and then engage appropriately.
Correct. And again, I mean, there are unique, I would say, approaches to the market. I'm the first to admit I am nowhere near the smartest guy in the room. But what I am is somebody who has actually been on the ground. I have battle scars. I promise you they're big and they're deep from mistakes that I have made. But it has made me a far better operator when advising clients on how they need to go about both either entering the Chinese marketplace and or if they're here, how to expand on it. Because quite frankly, we're at the stage now where entry, and again, look at the industry that we are in, which is asset management. Over the course of the last 12 months, really, there has been a new opportunity. You can now set up as a global asset manager to set up locally, wholly owned, onshore.
This was based on the bilateral agreement in 2015.
Correct. There was a bilateral agreement between China and the United States in principle in 2015. It went into effect in 2016 and actually rolled out in reality January of this year. And what I mean by that was the very first global manager, Fidelity, was approved to set up in, I guess that was late 2015. But in January of 2016, they launched their first product, their first asset management product.
And that became a bit of an inflection point. Is that correct?
Yes. I think from an issue of competitive positioning, There has been, without a doubt, from what we've been seeing, a shift in what is driving, if you will, the global asset management community. Historically, there was always a great deal of talk of China. China was important. China was a big market. A really important, I think, data point for everybody to keep in mind is that China right now in the mutual fund space, just the retail mutual fund space, is $1.2 trillion, $1.3 trillion U.S. dollars. It is the only market that has ever achieved that size without the benefit of defined contribution pension flows.
Which is just extraordinary, isn't it? But it's coming, isn't it?
Well, I have to be open and honest. The half of that money is actually in money market funds. So there is argument to be said, well, it's not really the right way to look at it. I do not disagree. I would add, however, that bank disintermediation is really what the primary driver has been. The question that remains open is whether or not you will find investors that are now in the money market funds actually move and reallocate at a later date into the higher fee generating, theoretically better performing equity funds, balanced funds, and the like. But I think what's important in terms of the inflection point you mentioned, this is a market that we do believe will grow at a relatively fast pace over the next 15, 20 years. Pension reform is clearly going to be one of the elements that drives it. But the issue is, prior to the inflection point, again, as you mentioned, what we actually had noticed was the majority of the asset managers globally were looking at China, but there's actually a bigger issue that they're facing. I mean,
which is?
Well, if you look at asset management globally, you have this battle between passive and active. Mm-hmm. And the passive and active players, you're finding the active managers are seeing both top and bottom line squeezed. Okay, this is their primary business on a global scale. Mm-hmm. And then what you have is the passive managers. The passive managers are fighting to the bottom. Mm-hmm. Like, how quickly can they lower their fees on their S&P 500 or their NASDAQ 100 ETFs? So in theory, what you have is all global managers are far more focused on protecting and solidifying their primary business. When you go to them and you say, hey, what about China? I completely understand when they say, look, we want to do something, but you need to understand we have bigger issues and higher priorities.
But Peter, why is it any different from any other business that's under pressure right now? I mean, there is always that idea of maintaining and managing your margins. At the same time, launching into new business models and business areas and frontiers. Take what's going with retail. Retail is going from bricks and mortar to e-commerce. They have to protect their bricks and mortar business, but it doesn't mean you don't do e-commerce. Why isn't it any different from fund managers?
I think it's... I don't know. You'd have to actually go and talk with the CEOs and the business managers. They're in a much better position to talk about their global business. What I would say, however, is that there's just the competitive element has only really just sunk in within the last 12 to 18 months. Mm-hmm. I think some firms have been a bit ahead of the curve. Some have been behind it. We've seen not one, not two, but three major mergers in the asset management space globally just this year alone. Yeah. And this is the direction that things are heading. So again, my point is that when you go and you say to people, look, we have this great, fast-growing, really complicated, everything's in a different language. Oh, and by the way, their culture is in such a way that it's probably going to make your life really complicated and miserable. Why don't you have a think about it? It's understandable why they would stop and say, let me get back to you.
This is Inside Asia. My guest is Peter Alexander, founder and managing director of Zeben Advisors, a consulting firm based in China whose core interest is in advising clients on how to best capitalize on growing investment opportunities. More in a moment.
Inside Asia is produced in partnership with 1880, a members club in Robertson Quay in the heart of downtown Singapore. Born out of the idea that conversations can and will make the world a better place, 1880 offers a space in which diverse minds gather and great ideas bloom. For more information or to inquire about membership, visit www.1880.com.sg.
This is Steve Stein, and this is Inside Asia. My guest this week is Peter Alexander, founder and managing director of Zeben Advisors, a Shanghai-based consulting firm offering advisory services to global financial institutions looking to penetrate the rapidly expanding China market.
We were just talking about the striking negative ideas many firms have about investing in China. Despite that negative perception, or maybe because of it, China investment is a clear and present opportunity. Navigating the convoluted waters of Chinese regulations has always been challenging, and attempting to penetrate the market can be risky. To do nothing, however, is to ignore one of the biggest investment opportunities of this decade. Let's get back to our discussion.
Your position is it is an opportunity. It's an emerging opportunity. And to ignore it is to basically to undermine the potential of your business.
Well, I would take it a bit more macro. And this is where we typically lose people. Right now, if you look at it, the majority of decision makers that we're directly dealing with, their line of sight is about 3 years. Again, not to sound overly cynical, but a lot of decision making in asset management, due to the ongoing attrition that we're seeing in the industry, is driven by career risk, meaning where do I allocate my time that puts me in the best position so that I can get promoted? Now, if you look at Asia Pacific, number of these large firms, the individuals that are running them, they're from corporate, they're here for 3 years, their job is to do something to grow the business, to put their mark on Asia, China included, and then to return back to head office.
And for most part, that hasn't changed in the last 20 years. It's been the rhythm of the way that multinationals, particularly US-based businesses, operate out here.
I can't speak to any other industry other than asset management, but I actually disagree with that comment for asset management. And the reason is that historically, if you looked at some of the largest asset management companies who are typically headquartered regionally in Hong Kong or Singapore, the individuals that ran those companies had been at those organizations. Maybe they climbed up through the corporate ladder regionally, but they knew the company and they knew the region. So they had a combination of two different skill sets that were highly useful. If you look around and canvas most global asset managers today, the vast majority of them have regional management, the regional CEO, if you will, who is from headquarters. So they're coming out, and I don't envy their job, because they're having to look at not just China. They, for the most part, have upwards between 8 and 12 different markets that they're looking at in the region. So I do believe that there has been a change. There has been an unfortunate dilution of knowledge around the industry regionally by global managers.
Okay.
It gets complicated then when you throw China on top of it all.
Right. So let's come back to China, because I think you're raising some of the career risk associated with China. Help us understand that.
Well, again, I mean, the line of sight, as I mentioned before, which is about 3 years, is understandable. So there's nothing that you can actually get achieved, that you can check a box off in China within 3 years. We have an adage when we talk to clients, which is if you give us 10 years, we can move the world for you in China. Going to anybody in this day and age and talking about a decade, that's a difficult proposition.
Right.
But what's happened this year is career risk, as we viewed it, was more aligned historically with non-action. We're going to talk about China. China is going to be important long-term, large market. I mean, they were checking off the boxes. It's sort of like, you know, meeting bingo, right? Making sure you're checking off the right boxes. But that, again, changed with regard to the Fidelity approval for product approval in January. Recently, you've had the likes of UBS, which has been approved as well to launch product. I think right now we have 20 plus, just over 20, global managers that have set up a 100% owned asset management platform in the mainland.
In the last 12 months?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. And so what you're saying now is the risk, career risk associated now is not being in China.
I think the career risk is moving in that direction. I have been surprised with the amount of the sheer time that I'm having to spend trying to explain all of this to the decision makers, not here regionally. Regionally, they understand it for the most part. I explained to regional management of our clients, our job is very simple. We are your advocates. Our job is to help you better explain. They typically want, you know, Peter Alexander, and I hate using myself as in the third person, but it is a fact of life, which is, you know, I have, again, not just been in China for 20 plus years, but have been in the Chinese asset management industry formally since its inception, right, even before its inception, and have been running Zevin Advisors for 13 years.
Right.
So there's a degree of understanding. And again, the platform that I'm referring to, what is commonly referred to as the WOFE, W-O-F-E, or W-F-O-E, Wholly Foreign Owned Enterprise, is actually for the asset management space, a platform that we pioneered back in 2011, 2012. So we do have that credibility of being able to go in and explain the realities of the situation.
And Peter, you're saying in the context of the last 20 years, this is the moment. This feels to you like one of those, and I know there have been many, and there's been right. kind of some false moments along the way, right? But you are feeling relatively confident that if you're going to be in this game, this is the time to move. These are the openings, in spite of some of the issues that continue to plague China in terms of the perspective or the perceptions of China. This is really, you would be doing yourself and your firm a disservice not to be here.
I think that might be a little bit over the top.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see how you react to that.
No, because look, I mean, I've learned again the hard way that keep in mind, I'm talking about China is a single market in a single region when we're talking about large institutions that are trying to look at multiple markets. And look, if I'm a global manager, the United States, even Europe, I mean, these are very open, very transparent markets. I know how to operate. So I get the reason why China may be something that they would be a little bit more standoffish. Do I think now is the time? I think now is sort of the beginning of the beginning. I guess the best way to phrase it would be when we do run into organizations that are really adamant about not doing anything in China for one reason or another. My response is the same for everyone, which is, look, that's fine. You don't have to be in right now, but do be aware that you will be in the market at some point. Whether it's today, a year from now, 5 years from now.
You can come willingly or be dragged in.
No, I don't think it's dragged. Yeah. I mean, I was interviewed once on CNBC and someone asked me whether Chinese foreign companies in China were being held hostage. Mm. My response is, look, these aren't people. These are institutions that have decision-making capabilities and can choose to do something or not to do something. I think for the space and the market here, I would just go back to my point about risk versus reward. China is a highly risky market. China is a highly volatile market. The markets, the equity markets, as example, don't necessarily track the GDP of the economy. But I think when people look back on this period of time, basically from 2010 till now, so the better part of a decade, they're going to begin to recognize that there has been a fundamental and real shift in the structural dynamics of China. Yes, it's difficult today to do business as a foreigner. And yes, there are, I would say, regulatory or even government-led obstacles that are being put in the way. I think that is more or less a very small element. I think the issue at hand is China has just become more competitive across all industries.
This is Inside Asia. My guest is Peter Alexander, founder and managing director of Zeben Advisors, and we're talking about evolution of asset management in China and the opportunities it presents to global financial institutions and their clients. Stay with us.
Inside Asia is produced in partnership with 1880, a members club in Robertson Quay, in the heart of downtown Singapore. Born out of the idea that conversations can and will make the world a better place, 1880 offers a space in which diverse minds gather and great ideas bloom. For more information or to inquire about membership, visit www.1880.com.sg.
This is Steve Stein, and you're listening to Inside Asia. My guest this week is Peter Alexander, founder of Zeben Advisors, and we're talking about the opening up of the China financial services sector and emergent opportunities for global financial institutions. In the last section of my interview, I ask about the core competencies that businesses need in order to succeed in this space.
In actuality, there are really only two variables to succeed. One is perseverance. I mentioned before about 10 years, you can achieve anything. If you're able to put the time in, I promise you, China is a market in which money is being made.
And I guess that would be true with the automotive industry. I mean, God knows they've been through their ups and downs, but they seem to be turning the corner now. Yes and no?
No, I think there's a bigger issue. And I think this structurally, I'm going to give you two anecdotes that are irrespective of financial services. Look at someone like General Motors. General Motors arrived in China when I arrived in China, right? Early 1996. And at the time, I think what they had done is they had won a bidding war with Ford to set up a joint venture with Shanghai Auto that was 50-50. And the price tag was $1 billion. Now, at the time...
The price of entry.
The price of entry. Now, at the time, first of all, everybody laughed and said that was like double what Ford had bid. I don't know that for certain. But at the time, if you were living in China, even Shanghai, this the metropolitan city that you see here, nobody was driving. Everybody was on bicycles. It's sort of like Starbucks. Why is Starbucks coming to China? Chinese don't drink coffee. So these preconceived notions were, and this was a huge risk for General Motors. Yeah. And they came in with this, I mean, with Buick of all things.
Yeah, an uncharacteristic of the auto industry in some ways, looking that far ahead, given the times and the circumstances, the 70s and 80s and what they went through.
No, absolutely. And I would be remiss not to give a shout out to Phil Murtaugh, who basically built that up and made it the success that it ended up being. But this was a company that came in and said, we're not only going to sell cars, but we're not going to sell small, we're going to sell massive cars. And they were able to find a great niche with businessmen and government officials and what have you. But it was a huge risk, and their reward was massive. Now, the other one that makes me laugh is Macau. Now, Macau is probably not the best argument, and do we really want to use the analogy of gambling here?
Yeah, we're talking Macau, which is the Portuguese enclave, which was returned to China in 1999.
I like to put it this way. Macau generates something like 4 to 5 times more revenue in gambling than the Strip. But when the market was open for bidding, I think there were 4, maybe 5 bids that were put out. At the time, and this is public record, this was in something I read years ago. At the time, the CEO of Caesars, which was at the time the largest gaming concern in the world, I believe, basically the gentleman who was running the company was all numbers, all about data, room rates, occupancy rates, you name it. And when he looked at what they would need to earn in terms of revenue to make the bid that they would have to put in worthwhile, he just said there was no way that it would be possible. So all numbers, nothing. Then you had people like Sheldon Adiger and Steve Wynn, who probably do everything but numbers. They came in and plopped down the money. And there's an argument that's now being made that they were able to stave off sort of the decline at some point with regard to the Strip and Vegas. And, you know, you have Caesars Harrah's going into bankruptcy. So I'm not necessarily...
So your argument here is if you're going to play big, lay the big bets.
I think, and that leads to my other point. I talked about perseverance. The other one that I explain is optionality, which is if you're going to bet, you need to bet big.
Yeah.
But most organizations don't have the capability. I've been in situations where I've had to go to a board after decisions have been made. I've been pulled aside by the CFO who has said, yeah, just so you know, there is no way that we're cutting that check. And again, my response is that's fine, but just understand that if you want to make that big bet, we actually worked on behalf of a client several years ago that wrote $250 million check to buy into the industry, and they did that in the span of 2 months. Now, granted, this was a privately owned, family-run company.
Which makes it a little easier, for sure. But, you know, it's interesting what you're pointing out here. I mean, maybe no coincidence you're using the idea of gambling or betting big, and yet go back to your original point about asset management. It's about risk management. So these guys, by their very nature, their very core, are risk averse to some degree, unless they see or can navigate their way through to see the potential high level of return.
No, without a doubt. And I think that was exacerbated. That sort of thought process around, it's not just risk. Risk, legal, and compliance, rightly or wrongly to the degree that they are now playing a role, drive a lot of business development decisions, unfortunately. Going back to my point about regional management, a lot of the individuals that actually left, that knew both the company and knew the region, they spoke to me and they said, look, it's no longer fun. You know, business development in the region was meant to go out and get new product out and get new licenses and enter new markets. And post the global financial crisis, there was basically a real refocusing on risk, legal, and compliance. My personal belief is that the pendulum has swung too far in the opposite direction. I was in the United States meeting with a large asset manager last summer. They were all excited. They wanted to talk China. And the entire meeting, which is attended by about 10 or 12 people internally, senior people, but the meeting was chaired by chief legal counsel.
Oh, interesting. There it is. It defines it. You know, whose point on this decision, right?
Correct. Yeah. And again, I'm not here to pass judgment. I actually understand the why. I've had, thankfully, dozens and dozens of very open and frank conversations with senior people globally who have voiced to me their frustration that they get the China play. They understand the future of growing their business, their asset management business is in China. It's just getting individuals that are around a board table to see the logic behind it. Contrary to the popular belief, China is not a difficult place. China has a playbook. It's actually a pretty thin playbook when it comes to everything from negotiations to how to address. And a lot of it actually just comes down to communication. If you communicate things that are problematic or elsewhere, you can actually do quite well. So I think that it really comes down to the issue of at what level of a priority is China right now? And I cannot stress this enough. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. All global asset managers, I mean, I think I was saying before, right now there are 2021 global asset managers operating with full control in the mainland, two of which have been able to launch a product, Fidelity and UBS. Our expectation is by the end of the year, the number of those players will go from 20 probably to 30, 35. And the number that will have a product at market will probably go from 2 to maybe 4 or 5. 2018, that's the real issue. That is when you're going to see pretty much every major global asset manager serious about China having opened up an onshore entity, and probably half of the, let's call it 50 names that are out there, half of them will have a product that they've been able to launch. It'll become increasingly difficult to answer back to even your board, what is our China strategy? I mean, that is the question that more people are coming and asking of us.
So know the playbook, start training, and get in the game.
Yes. And get into the game, maybe. I think you have to ask yourself, and again, it's a widely used adage, right? Are you a player or are you a spectator? Mm. And meeting with a large European group last week, we have three or four major areas that we know are not just businesses, but these are businesses that move the dial. Mm. That's something else that we have to factor in, right? You know, we have a group that'll come to us and say, look, Chad, I get it. You know, we run $100 million or $200 million. That's not doing anything. Fully understandable. But there are actually businesses that are underrepresented, even locally, let alone from global players, that are needle-moving opportunities. Now, it's great because I have clients ask me that all the time, or actually more often than not, groups that aren't clients. Oh, what are they? And I have to laugh. And I'm like, well, you know, our advice doesn't come for free, you know.
So stay tuned for this one. Listen, I want to thank you for taking time out. And I think it's a fascinating moment in the whole financial services market here in China. And we wish you many good years and some great advice.
Thank you very much.
That was my interview with Peter Alexander, founder and managing director of Zubin Advisors. You can find out more about Peter and his organization and explore and download any of our past episodes at www.insideasiapodcast.com. You can also sign up for our Inside Asia newsletter, and we'll keep you posted on new developments and upcoming discussions. Again, that's www.insideasiapodcast.com. And now our short wrap-up, or bungkus. It's an Indonesian term for a quick takeaway meal. We use it to conclude our shows and sum up my conversations. In this week's discussion with Peter Alexander, our takeaway comes in three helpings. The first is that failure to invest in China is first and foremost a failure of the imagination. Yes, there have been and there will continue to be risks, but China is changing. Regulations are less opaque. The market is ripening. Peter explains how the combination of internal banking sector constraints combined with China's newfound global ambitions are generating new opportunities for global financial institutions. Let's be frank. Big banks, along with other multinational corporations operating in China, have seen their share of hard times. China is notorious for its unilateral approach and local company favoritism.
There's resistance among global asset managers, and some might argue even good reason to steer clear of China. But Peter makes an important point. It's easier, he says, to latch on to past events to justify staying away than it is to run at the future possibilities that come with the prospect of China investment. He reminds us that confirmation bias always plays a role, particularly when it comes to bad press around treatment of foreign financial institutions. The taste of mistreatment won't fade too soon, and there are plenty of tales that bankers tell that reinforce general wariness. After all, it's human nature to grasp onto information that confirms our biases before we start asking the right questions. That's real and even understandable. The important thing is to see around it. My second takeaway from the conversation is that in order to get into the game, you have to know the playbook and train accordingly. Yes, investing in China and participating in the evolution of asset management is new territory, fraught with risks and challenges. The rules may seem unfamiliar, and because it is China, you may need to finesse, shift, and intermittently adjust your strategy to find the sweet spot. There's nothing easy about this, and maybe for bankers, the idea of playing by someone else's rules might feel, well, I don't know, uncomfortable. But get your head around the cultural divide and the nuances of operating in China, and there's money to be made. Fortune favors the bold. And here's a parting thought. The game is being played whether you're in it or not. No single bank or financial institution will hold sway over China's regulators. This is new territory. Uncharted waters to some degree. This is, as Peter says, the beginning of the beginning. There are miles to go. What's your China strategy? Whether you're in all the way, halfway, or not at all, the time is rapidly approaching when to not have an answer is to not be in the game. So to the world's financial institutions and asset managers, I ask, can you afford not to be in China? This is Steve Stein reminding you to come in from the outside on Inside Asia. Thanks for listening.
Inside Asia is produced in partnership with 1880, a members club in Robertson Quay, in the heart of downtown Singapore. Born out of the idea that conversations can and will make the world a better place, 1880 offers a space in which diverse minds gather and great ideas bloom. For more information or to inquire about membership, visit www.1880.com.sg.